2016 was a fascinating year in politics. 2017 will be a very important year in terms of policy and governing. So, Wisconsin, I want to thank Governor Scott Walker for taking a few minutes to talk to us at the end of this year.
Our pleasure. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the residence.
Thank you very much. I want to move into some issues very quickly. I want to follow up on your letter to President Trump. Mm-hmm. One of the issues, should Wisconsin accept more refugees from war-torn regions of the world? If so, on what conditions and how many, sir?
Well, our expectation is not so much about number and conditions as much as it is about ensuring that they're safe. What we've seen in Europe, sadly, all throughout many different countries in Europe, is with the move of not just immigrants, but refugees in particular, they've seen in Syria, you've got embedded a number of people who are part of the Islamic State and other elements of radical Islamic terrorism. And the last thing we want is our own citizens at risk here. We're not talking about stopping refugees overall. We're not talking about people with legitimate issues out there. But right now, I and most other governors in this country feel that we haven't been given an adequate amount of certainty of knowing that these individuals have been vetted before being brought into the country.
Do you think they'll be better vetted, under President Trump?
That's my expectation, and I certainly hope so. And we're not only going to hope for that, we're going to push for that.
Just a quick follow-up. So you're not saying Wisconsin shouldn't adopt more refugees?
No.
You're not?
Although the one interesting thing to think about beyond just the safety issue is really, I think there's a larger question beyond Wisconsin that we need to have here in the United States is, if these are true refugees, the definition of a refugee is someone who's going to return to their homeland. Someone accepting political asylum or being an immigrant is completely different. That purpose is to go in and stay into those countries. A refugee is someone who will come back. I think there's a legitimate argument to be made that, and I was just in the Persian Gulf a couple of weeks ago, that our allies there, like the Saudis and others, who are Sunni states, they're not just Muslim states, they're Sunni states, much like many of the refugees, should be pushed to take more of the refugees there where they're connected with the not only the religious belief but the ethnic connections and where they're closer to home should they choose to return once things hopefully someday settle down.
Okay, new subject. If President Trump has a $1 billion infrastructure investment in highways, bridges, roadways, and that law says that states must put up a match of 10% to 20%, here's my question. Would you consider raising either the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee to count towards Wisconsin's match?
No, because my promise to the voters 2 years ago when I ran was that I would not raise the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee unless there was a corresponding decrease. So the only way we'd do that is if I could cut income taxes for everybody or cut sales taxes for everybody. That's just my promise. It's not just my position, which it is my personal belief, but it's what I told the voters repeatedly. If we had some sort of a match, as we do on other requirements even of late, we'd account for that within the monies that we have currently. We could put that in the match of those projects, but I wouldn't do it with a gas tax increase.
If President Trump gets through Congress a $1 trillion investment in our roads, mm-hmm. bridges, and highways, do you expect that to impact the 2017-2019 state budget, sir?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I think a lot of the changes, there have been some talk about even permissive things that could come up either in that budget or otherwise. Some of those probably don't have an impact directly on this budget. It is possible, particularly in the second year of the biennium, that it could have an impact. My guess is we won't know it when I present my budget early in February, but the legislature might have a better idea by the time they get it done, which should be hopefully mid to late June.
Would it be pretty easy for a Trump administration to get rid of the prohibition on Wisconsin tolling, sir?
Well, it's something it would require not just the administration doing, but the statutes, because it's right now, for example, in Rockford and the larger Chicago area, it's an exemption granted through the federal statutes.
Yep.
So they would have to do that. If they did that, which is something, for example, my friend Speaker Robin Voss has been advocating for, at least us having that option, that's probably more of a long-term solution,
right,
at least beyond this budget, because even if they did it right away, which I doubt it'll happen right away, it could happen this coming year, but I don't think it happens in January, for example, that's probably at least 2 to 2.5 to 3 years out just with the untangling of the federal law, but then just the infrastructure, just putting in place the mechanism by which to do that probably doesn't happen until the next budget. And then we can have a larger debate if something like that were even to be considered, would it be done in the context of even potentially lowering the gas tax? Those are all things that are reasonable to discuss as long as we're not raising the overall.
Speaker Voss and members of his caucus, have mentioned tolling. Are they a bigger fan of tolling than you are, sir?
Well, that's not something I put on my agenda, but like I said, if we even had that option. Today we don't have it, so typically I don't talk about it, because until you get the authority to even consider it, it's not worth getting hyped up about. But if that were ever an option, and like I said, maybe we could lower the gas tax by the offset from that, those at least would be things that would be willing to discuss as a long-term alternative to just today, where most of our funding comes from the gas tax and the vehicle registration fee.
Yeah, 90%. When you look at changes to the tax code, are you looking at recommending in the next budget phasing out the personal property tax?
I'm not right now. A number of people have brought that to our attention. I get the policy concern about it. They make some very legitimate points, but it's about $250 million. Yeah. And I'm not going to push it off the local property taxpayers, because that would raise local property taxes. And obviously I've made a commitment that local property taxes, as they were again this year, would be lower in 2018 than when we started before the 2010 tax bills came out. And so we're not going to push it off there. And if the state's going to pick it up, I think I and a whole lot of other people in the legislature might say, if I had $250 million, there might be a few other places I'd spend it on first.
When local school districts pass referendums, is that a good thing? Because your opponents say they're having to go to referendums because the state is not coming up with enough GPR aid. But do you support those generally referendums, school districts, voters having a choice?
Well, a couple of different things. One, in this next budget, we've made it clear that there's going to be a significant increase in aid to public education in the state, that overall aid's going to go up. While we also probably put in, and it's something I heard, in fact, I've gone through by the end of this week, every one of the 72 counties. Some counties actually done more than just one listening session this year. And one of the things I hear a lot, particularly in rural districts, is the needs that they have that go beyond just traditional school districts. So we'll put the lion's share into the general school aid formula, but we'll also put some into what's called sparsity aid to help with the high cost of transportation and other things that come from smaller, more rural districts, either in farm areas or in the woods in the north. But I think putting more into public education will help address that issue significantly. On top of that, I think in order to maintain not only property tax relief, but an adequate level of funding going forward, we've got to make sure that if districts want to go to referendum, that's one thing, but those taxpayers should take a vote on supporting that. But they shouldn't expect other taxpayers who live in other jurisdictions who don't go to referendum to pick up that much of a greater share of their overall school budgets. And so we're going to look at some reforms there as well.
The four-year graduation rate for Milwaukee Public Schools is 58%. Mm-hmm. Will there be anything in your next budget to hopefully raise that graduation rate, sir?
Well, there's a whole series of things, not just in the budget, but overall we've been trying to do for some time, and that is if we can deal with attendance, which means truancy and otherwise, particularly in elementary school age kids, and getting every kid to read at or above grade level by the time they leave elementary school. Ironically, even though you're talking about graduation rates, much of what happens in terms of people graduating is dependent on what happens early on when they're in elementary school. If a student is reading at or above grade level, their chances of graduating go up significantly. Conversely, if they're not reading at or above grade level by the time they're going on to middle school or beyond, they're four times more likely not to graduate and 13 times more likely if you add poverty as a factor. So we just know the data shows us focus your time and your attention on getting kids to read and getting kids to show up. One of the big challenges Milwaukee's had for years is you've got many cases in parts of that city, you've got a very transient population. I don't care what your economic status is or whether or not you're a two-parent household or not. If you're moving, if a kid's moving two or three times a school year, it becomes incredibly difficult, no matter what the circumstances, for them to focus on their education. Keep them in school, get them the support they need to read well, and I think that'll help long-term in terms of graduation rates.
Why did the Opportunity Schools plan of Senator Darling and Representative Coinga fail, sir?
Well, because a couple things. They changed the criteria, so they added a greater focus on poverty, which I don't buy into. I think to me that's sending exactly the wrong message. What it's saying is now suddenly we're not going to hold you accountable for schools that are failing to meet expectations because a bunch of the kids are living in poverty. I think that's precisely why you want to hold them accountable, because the only way many of those kids are going to get lifted up out of poverty is through education. So that's exactly the wrong message. We want to hunker down even more on areas of high poverty and make sure that those students are getting the best possible education that we can give them. And so in the future, we're going to have to look for other ways to get at that. I applaud Superintendent Driver. I think she's trying to do a tremendous job there, but there are going to need to be additional reforms going forward, or at least additional alternatives given, so that every child in Milwaukee, like every child in the state, can have access to a great education, no matter what their background, no matter what the income of their family, no matter what their parental status is.
Superintendent Driver, as you know, is recommending a longer school year. Is that something you support?
Well, I think realistically, having some flexibilities in terms of how many days they have to be there, about how long the school day is, I think it's been a long time in place that there's been a school day start, largely because Wisconsin's heavily dependent on the tourism industry. Mm-hmm. And I don't foresee that changing. I mean, it's one of those things where Milwaukee's asked specifically for the Milwaukee Public School System. Others have talked about it statewide. I get their point, but it's something that if you ask just about any attraction, hotel, restaurant, or others in high areas of tourism, they'd tell you that's one of their biggest challenges is having enough students, typically seasonal workers, to work. So I think that part's going to be a bit difficult. But I think the other parts in terms of the flexibility, even how many days or hours students are in the classroom, really should be dependent on the needs of that district.
Expansion of school choice. The Republicans say they're going to push to expand it. Do you do that by removing the income limits or going to education savings accounts?
Well, there's a number of different ideas out there. I don't know what exactly we may or may not do. A lot will depend on how much money, like I said, we could put into traditional public education. Part of the reason why I pushed for a statewide expansion in my last budget was not so much to create a separate district. You know, one of the great myths that opponents have out there is somehow we're piling all this money into a separate district. You look at how much we spend on public education versus how much is spent on vouchers, particularly outside of Milwaukee and Racine, and it's a fraction. I mean, it's like a drop in the lake out here. It's nothing compared to that. The main reason why I did that was to put pressure on our public school districts to fully use and embrace the reforms we gave them through Act 10 so that they're maximizing the benefit to our students and to our local taxpayers. Otherwise, some school districts like Madison, which was the last one in to use any of the reforms out there, some of them were reluctant to fully use and embrace those reforms. Having a little bit of that pressure, I think, went a long way towards that. But to me, I want to give them time to show that those reforms can work. Because my kids went to public schools in Wauwatosa. I went to Delavan Darien High School, a public school. My nieces are going to public schools. I love and embrace public schools. I just want to make sure that every child and every family has the right choice for their family, and I trust the parents to make the right decision. So I want to give them as many different positive quality choices as possible.
Are you satisfied that veterans at the King Home are getting safe and adequate care?
Well, obviously, overall, we've had traditionally had some very strong rankings. Those have changed a little bit of late, largely right, because of one particular episode with a patient that was completely unacceptable. That's something that the staff there and the department's taken action on. And in fact, in the last 6 months, at all of our facilities, as well as some others in the state, we bumped up the salaries so that we can both retain and attract even more talent to make sure all those positions are filled. There's a number of other things we're looking to do. But clearly, my expectation as we look forward to the new year and the selection of a new secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is that she or he would make that a priority to make sure that patient care for our veterans and their families, because a number of these homes have the spouses of our distinguished veterans as well, that are at the top level possible.
Representative Kramer's bill would allow carrying concealed weapons if you have a permit on college and university campuses. Could you sign that into law?
Well, right now, my focus overall in the next legislative session is overwhelmingly going to be on workforce issues and making sure we have the workforce we need for the foreseeable future, not just for the 21st century. And when it comes to UW, really my focus is less on issues like that and more on a question of can I put more funding, which I plan on doing, but I'm going to tie it to performance so that if we're giving more money to the University of Wisconsin system, that they put that out in a way that aligns, much as we did with the technical colleges a few years ago and the Blueprint for Prosperity, it's aligned so that it's not just about enrollment. It's about, are you enrolling in courses or in degrees that are high demand areas? Are they graduating? Are they graduating on time? Are they getting employed in Wisconsin? All those things are critically important, as is the idea that we need to continue to make college more affordable. I heard that in every one of my listening sessions, not only from the high school students who were part of it, but from a lot of families and even some grandparents who said, increasingly it's difficult to send their sons and daughters to school anywhere in the country at the level tuition's gone up. Thankfully, we froze it for 4 years. We got to continue to make it more affordable.
Your reaction to the UW falling out of the top five in terms of research campuses nationally, sir? Democrats say that's
on
a result.
Dollars. Well, that's a good example. The difference between Democrats and me are, I believe we should measure quality. They believe you should measure funding. The funding is what changed, and it didn't. It's still in the top six. I mean, we're still top 10 material out there. But the difference is they focused on the funding and said, aha. I focus on the fact, something that's largely been ignored. It's funny how the banner headlines funding. Everybody ignores the fact that U.S. News and World Report does their ranking every year, which is the gold standard by which colleges and universities are measured. And the University of Wisconsin went up in the ranking. That's on the quality of the overall school versus how much money do you put in research. The fact is we still have one of the largest research budgets of any academic institution in the world. It's just a little bit different than a few of the others, but still in the top 10. And we have a college, our flagship school, that's gone up in its ranking, and a number of other campuses that were duly noted in that U.S. News and Report. So I think it's a fundamental difference. People should look at that. Do you want to focus on quality, or do you want to focus on how much money you put in? I think, obviously, you have to have a base level of funding, which we do, but I think quality should be the measure.
Final question. 6 years ago when you were seeking your first term, is it still true that public employees are the haves and taxpayers are the have-nots?
We've in and out quite a bit. I'm included in that. I had to pay probably as much as any public employee in the state in terms of adding more money in to pay for my pension contribution and my health insurance premium contribution. In fact, arguably, I probably take home a little bit less as governor after all that than I did when I was county executive prior to being governor. But it was well worth it because, to me, we were able to avoid a massive tax increase that would have devastated the economy. We certainly didn't need that 6 years ago. We were able to avoid laying off 10 to 15,000 public employees, which would have been devastating to them and to their families, as well as to the services we provide. And we were able to not cut Medicaid, which cares for needy families and children. In fact, we made historic investments in our Medicaid budgets in the past. So I think in the end that worked out well, and we're still well off. My brother mentioned at the time that people in his congregation, his church, who the first week or two kind of grumbled and people were empathetic, stopped talking about it. I said, well, why? He said, well, when people realized that most of those public employees were paying little or nothing for health insurance, and now they were asked to pay a little bit, that people were upset that they weren't paying anything in the first place. I think now it started to level up, but it's still, public employees are still getting a pretty good deal. It's just a little bit closer to where the rest of society is at. And I think that's good for everyone.
And I assume if you got a call from the Trump transition team about going to Washington, you told them no?
I was much politer than saying no. I pointed out, as I've said repeatedly publicly, I've said privately as well, that the best thing I can do for my state and for my country is continue to be governor here, to be the leader this year of the Governors Association, a position I was elected to last month, and potentially, if things work out, I haven't announced it yet, but potentially run for re-election in 2 years and continue to be a leader both here and hopefully lead other states, just like Tommy Thompson did back in the 90s, leading on welfare reform and education reform. I think I can do more good in that regard. And so it wasn't a no, it was pointing to those things that I redirected them.
You're going to stay in Madison.
Absolutely. I'm going to stay here. I had some chances, and I'm a huge fan. Well, I'm excited about the new president, but I'm particularly a huge fan of Mike Pence, as one of my closest friends, and I'm going to continue to help him. I just don't need to be in the administration to do that.
Governor Scott Walker, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas to you and your
Merry
family.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Happy New Year.
Thanks.
Thank you.